Springfield's Talk 104.1. I'm Nick Reed, and it is Thursday, which means it is time for Author of the Week, sponsored by ABC Books on North Glenstone. And our author, we've actually been fortunate enough to have, I know at least for one other book, Rainer Zeitelman. He's got a doctorate in history, sociology, authored and edited 31 separate books, been translated into 35 languages. Some of those books include Defense of Capitalism, Power of Capitalism, and How Nations Escape Poverty. And I know for sure we last spoke with him regarding his book, How Nations Escape Poverty, and he joins us this morning for his upcoming book, The New Space Capitalism, The Entrepreneurial Path to the Stars. And this is one of those books I don't even really know how to begin asking you questions. It's such uncharted territory. So I guess let's start with just what prompted you to write the book.
Yes, because decades ago, I think almost no one could imagine that private companies, private entrepreneurs would be the first in space travel. And we thought this is only something that can be done by the state, by the government, as it was with the Apollo program and the first moon landing. But now a lot of things change today. I give you only one number, and this is a surprise for many people. From 324 rocket launches last year, there were 165 by SpaceX. So it means SpaceX alone had more rocket launches than all countries in the world. And if SpaceX were a country, it would be number one, far ahead of China with 88 launches. Or another number, from 15,000 active satellites in space, 10,000 are Starlink satellite. So you see, a lot of things have changed, and this is what my book is about. Why did it change, and what is the reason why today we have space flight is almost private and not more government-led.
It's interesting, and you're right. In our minds, we think, well, clearly this is something for government to do. But I believe historically, even first in flight, the Wright brothers, while they as private citizens were working on the ability to fly with machine, there were government efforts underway with a lot more resources available to those individuals. Yet the Wright brothers, just in their own private endeavors, were the ones that first were able to accomplish that feat, which would then kick off flight as we know it today. And so it's interesting that when we look at space exploration, that it does appear as if now the private industry, namely Elon Musk, is taking this over. Why do you think it has taken this long for the private sector to become so prevalent in space exploration?
Well, first of all, you're absolutely right. Before the Wright brothers were successful, there were several government-funded professors, for example, who tried it several weeks before, and he was not successful. And then there was an article in the New York Times, and they said, oh, if it can happen maybe in between 1 million or 10 million years, it can be happen. And then a few weeks later, this private by Wright brothers, they were successful, so you are well informed. Why did it take so long? Of course, in the 60s, I think there were no billionaires as rich as today, Elon Musk or Jeff Bezos, who could finance it or who had the idea. And everyone thought it has to be funded by the government. And of course, the moon landing was a success. But then, and this is the story of my book, we had 50 years of failure. The space shuttle program was a total failure. And it ended then in 2011, when the United States were not longer able to bring their own astronauts from American soil with an American rocket to the International Space Station. They had to rely on this old Russian Soyuz rockets. The headline of this chapter in my book is the end of the future. This is how it was in 2011. And there were before some smart people from think tanks or even very few politicians said, let us try it with private companies. But the majority of politicians in Asia, they were very skeptical. Oh, no, we will never be successful. This will be a total disaster. This is a crazy idea. But then there was a moment in 2011, and I have it in more detail in my book, when everything failed and when, as I said, they were not longer able to bring their own astronauts to the International Space Station. This was something you call like the Hail Mary moment. So the last try, okay, let us try with these private companies. And there were some smart people in NASA who understood that this is a possibility, but I have it in my book. One of those people in NASA who were in charge for working together with Musk, she wrote, every week people came in my office and said, oh, so you're so poor that you have to work with these crazy people. This will never be successful. And so, but in the end, you know, the result then in 2020, America was able again to bring their own astronauts to the International Space Station, but now with SpaceX. And I explain in my book why it changed and especially how and why Elon Musk was able to reduce the launch costs by 95%. Because if you compare the launch costs for the space shuttle with the internal costs that Elon Musk has today, it's really a reduction by 95%. And I explain in my book how this could happen and why private space travel is superior to government-led space travel.
We are talking with our author of the week, Rainer Zeitelman, the book, The New Space Capitalism, The Entrepreneurial Path to the Stars. I was going to ask it, what sort of partnership or how this would look, because when you note the private component to space travel, and really it hasn't been up until recently, there's someone who has had the wealth to do this, and there aren't many people as wealthy as Elon Musk. Do you think that this reduction, the privatization of space travel, resulting in a reduction of cost, will then open it up further into the private market?
Sure, absolutely. SpaceX is outstanding today, but it's, of course, there are other companies. I give you one example. I have it in my book. It's Rocket Lab. This is a company founded by an entrepreneur, Peter Beck from New Zealand. And he had his company, Rocket Lab, had 21 rocket launches last year, also a private company, only to compare it in Europe with our government-led space flight. We had only 8 launches last year in whole Europe, 8 launches. So SpaceX has 20 times as much, and this Rocket Lab has 3 times more. I think SpaceX is only the beginning. And one of the reasons of why he could reduce the launch cost is, of course, he was the first one to build a real reusable rocket. Imagine if you would fly, for example, from New York to Europe, and you could use the airplane only one time. And I think then it would be so expensive. I don't know how much you had to pay for a ticket, maybe $800,000 or something like this. And this is how all government-led space organizations and also NASA work today. The last one with the Artemis, with this flyby to the moon, it cost $4 billion, and it was only, again, this rocket only for one-time use. And this makes a big difference. Elon Musk has a rocket now, this Falcon 9. He used the same rocket 34 times. And if you can use it 34 times and only one time, everything becomes much cheaper. And this is only one reason. Another reason is because the way in the 60s the NASA worked together with private companies was very stupid. They had contracts that you call cost plus contracts. It means that the private companies like Boeing or Rockwell, they had to prove their costs. For example, $1 billion, and then they could add maybe 8 to 10% profit. So, but this was incentive to increase the cost, because if you get always 10% added, 10% added to the costs, and if you have, for example, 1 billion costs, you get 100 million, and if you had 3 billion, you get 300 million. Mm-hmm. Then you have an incentive to increase the costs. And Elon Musk works with NASA in a totally different way today. He doesn't sell them his rockets, but a service like with UPS or like FedEx, for example. We deliver a satellite in orbit and we charge you so many dollars. Or we bring your astronauts to the International Space Station and we charge you this for this service. So he builds his rockets the way he likes, and he doesn't sell his rockets to NASA, but he charges only like his service.
We're talking with our author of the week, sponsored by ABC Books on North Glenstone, Rainer Zeidelman, on his book, New Space Capitalism, The Entrepreneurial Path to the Stars. We've become accustomed to a very, very slow pace of advancement when it comes to space travel and exploration. Many would argue we pretty much flatline. With what Elon Musk is doing, how quickly do you see us now accelerating forward with exploration compared to the last several decades?
It depends. Part of my book is about the history, but another part is about the future. And we have one big problem. Who would pay for this? For example, Elon Musk has the plan to settle 1 million people on Mars. Or now the next, he want to build a small city on the moon. But of course, this is not possible to pay it by with taxpayers' money, by the government. So there has to be an alternative. And I have an alternative in my book. The problem today is that according to the Article 2 of the Outer Space Treaty from 1967, for countries, for nations, it's not allowed to own celestial bodies or to own private property in space. So there is no private property in space. And this is a problem, because so you have no business model that works. It's like a kind of socialism without private mm-hmm. property. This didn't work on Earth. And why should something that nowhere on Earth worked in the last 100 years, why should it work on Mars or on the moon? This is a crazy idea. So what we really would need, and this it depends everything, how fast we will be successful, when there would be the possibility to own private property on the moon, for example, or Mars, then there would be an incentive. And without an incentive, nothing happens in the world. No, in the 60s, it was another thing. In the 60s, we had the space race between the United States on the one hand and the Soviet Union on the other hand. It was about national prestige and who was the first to go to the moon. But in the moment when the flag, the American flag, was on the moon, then the wind was out of the sails and there was no longer any reason. Mm. And this is and so I think we need really economic incentives today for the next step in space. And my idea in my book, I answer the question, who should have the right to acquire property in space? And my answer is straightforward. Those who have the financial means to reach, develop, and use it, and who are willing to take the risk. I give you an example. If SpaceX succeeds in reaching Mars and begins building permanent settlements, then ownership of land should initially go to this company. Of course, not the entire planet, but a manageable area. Maybe, let's say, perhaps the size of Singapore. And given that Mars has a surface area roughly 200 times larger than Singapore, there would be enough place for multiple settlements. And I think such a framework would also make it possible to finance it. For example, SpaceX could place then Martian land into a real estate investment trust. And yes, this is what I'm thinking. Bring the Mars to the stock exchange.
Once again, thank you, especially with time zone difference, we being in the States and you being in Germany. Our author of the week, Rainer Zeidelman, the book, again, New Space Capitalism, The Entrepreneurial Path to the Stars, for Springfield's Talk 104.1. I'm Nick Reed.